Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that continues to seek out quality film wherever it lurks. And while theaters in Washington continue to remain shuttered, that means, for many of us at least, settling for what we can find on the internet. I say settling for, but that doesn't do justice to the range of cinema that's out there. For example, six of the top shorts from the most recent Sundance Film Festival, which are streaming through the Magic Lantern Theater. Another is the documentary The Social Dilemma, a Netflix offering that is a sober study of the profound effect, for good and bad, that the internet has had on society. Let's begin this week's show by checking out the six short films that were deemed the best of what Sundance 2020 had to offer. It seems so long ago now, but a few film festivals did manage to complete their 2020 runs early in the year. One, of course, was the Spokane International Film Festival. Yay. Another was the Sundance Film Festival, which held its annual event in Park City, Utah, January 23rd through February 2nd. One of the most entertaining programs of any festival involves shorts, and Sundance is no different, especially this year. A total of 74 shorts were selected from a record high 10,397 submissions, and six have been included in the virtual program that is streaming through the Magic Lantern Theater, including the short film Grand Jury Prize winner, intriguingly titled Moroccan Entry, So What If the Goats Die? Let's run through each of the six and pick our favorites.
Well, I'll start by highlighting one of the Sundance shorts that actually has a local connection, and it is called The Deepest Hole, directed by local filmmaker and Gonzaga professor Matt McCormick, who has a background in music videos and other shorts. And this is about a 12-minute documentary film that he made. And it concerns, and I, by the way, I didn't know anything about this story until I was doing an interview with Matt, and he was telling me about that he was working on this film. And so I looked it up, and it's so fascinating. But it's about this thing that's called the Kola Super Deep Borehole. And it basically came about because of another space race between the Soviets and America. But in this case, it was instead of going to space, they were trying to drill as far down as possible into the Earth's crust, past the Earth's crust, to try and find out what was going on down there. And they ended up going thousands of feet into the Earth. And supposedly, according to an urban legend that developed, put a microphone down into the center of the Earth and produced these sounds that can best be described as screams from hell. And this basically was embraced by Christian media, who used it as evidence that the afterlife exists. And so, you know, it's that whole idea that if hell exists, then therefore heaven must exist. And so in the 12 minutes of this film, The Deepest Hole, it sort of it tells you all of this in a remarkably succinct fashion, and also tells you at the end what the noises that they produce, what they actually were. And it's kind of a beautiful little punchline at the end of this. So this was my favorite of the six, I think. I just love weird little kind of sidebars in history like this. So if you want to read more, the Wikipedia for the Kola Super Deep Borehole, which I don't know if some punk band hasn't taken that name already, I might steal it. It's really worth a read. And this movie's definitely worth a watch. It's so interesting.
Yeah, this might have been my favorite as well, because first of all, it's a documentary, so why not? And I like the Gonzaga and local connection, but also for those of us of a certain vintage, we were familiar with this phenomenon, but I didn't really know the backstory about boring these holes to the center of the Earth. And it's even more fascinating about what happens to the Russian borehole subsequently, because that was actually one of my favorite parts of the whole thing. So you have this amazing monument to history, and then it's not really preserved in any fashion whatsoever. And so that was an intriguing part of this too.
Well, it's also my favorite of the six. And over and above what both of you are saying about the basic intrinsic intrigue of the story itself, is what McCormick did in making this. I mean, you know, you could have done a straight documentary. Hey, you know, the hole was built here and the Russians did this, blah, blah, blah. He is so imaginative in how he tells this story that it had me from word go. I mean, I absolutely love this documentary. I couldn't figure out for the life of me what was happening until the very end. And then I went, oh, wow, what to put this whole thing together. It is truly an amazing
movie. And it's so weird that if you didn't know this actually existed, you might think, like, is this some kind of mockumentary or a faux documentary? Exactly. Is this fake? But yeah, it's all true. It's truth is stranger than fiction, sometimes they say.
Exactly. So MP, what was another one you liked?
Well, I'm not sure that these were my favorites, but I did appreciate the fact that of the six streaming, two of them have to do with women's issues in sort of very unusual ways. So there's a short film, of course, as part of this program, titled Hot Flash. And it's actually an animated portrayal of a woman who is a TV presenter. She's a weather person, and she's about ready to go on the air, and she has this extreme hot flash. And so the whole short film is focused on how she's trying to manage this and deal with it and navigate it. And I have to say, even though there's a huge campaign now that some people may not be familiar with around menstrual justice, so talking about, the tampon tax, talking about, healthcare coverage and so forth and so on, not a whole lot of attention has been paid yet to menopause. So the fact that this is now part of popular culture, so to speak, I say, woohoo.
So the other one you were talking about is Meats, right?
Right. The other one is Meats, and it's about a woman who's vegan and she's pregnant, but now all of a sudden in Meats, she starts craving meat. And it's a little grisly and off-putting. And I think that was the point, at least in part. But again, it's a subject that we don't always or necessarily talk about. So I appreciated it. I also liked the acting in Meats. I think a commentary on a variety of things, not only veganism, but women's issues about people changing their minds in various ways and so forth.
Yeah. And I enjoyed both of those. The third one I liked was a little movie out of Malaysia called The Benevolent Ba, which is a story about a family, a Muslim family, who want to do a sacrifice of a goat, right? A goat at this property they've just bought. And once again, here's a simple storyline that the filmmaker throws in some weird things that, I mean, for example, there's an homage to Michael Jackson and his short Thriller, the music video that went along with that. And it's what's interesting is that it goes along with the Moroccan movie.
So what if goats die?
So what if goats die? So there's two goats in that. And then there's what? Sheep in Meats and sheep in what other one did you mention, Nathan?
I think that was it. I think you've got the livestock covered here.
Yeah, okay. So I like both Benevolent Ba and I liked So What If Goats Die, which has an intriguing film, which is a simple story about a guy who is trying to get feed for his living in a remote spot out in the Atlas Mountains of Morocco with his father. And he's trying to get feed for the goats that apparently have had a hard winter. And then there's this notion that something has happened extraterrestrial. And so it's a study of religion and faith and
phenomenon.
Yeah, phenomenon. Exactly. And how that causes you to question your faith or not, or strengthen your
faith.
And
I thought it was beautifully filmed. I mean, of course, that area of Morocco is gorgeous anyway.
Stark, but gorgeous.
Right.
Yes.
But it's the sort of contrast between what's happening in the village. And then there's a familial sort of storyline as well. And then the remote beauty of the Atlas Mountains was pretty amazing.
We talk about short films a lot. Usually when Oscar time comes around, we often review the nominated films. And in the case of a lot of the winning Oscar shorts, they usually get turned into feature films, which very rarely fare as well as their much shorter predecessors. And I think of all of the six shorts that we saw, I think the one that would probably most successfully be translatable into a feature length is the Moroccan film, So What If the Goats Die, which, right, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, won the short grand jury prize at Sundance. And I think if you did give this story a little bit more time and kind of fleshed out the characters a little more, I think it could potentially work as a 90-minute film. Of course, not all stories need to be 90 minutes long or 2 hours long. Some work just fine as 15 or 20-minute shorts. But I think of all of them, if we're thinking about it on those terms, this is the one that I think could be stretched out if the filmmakers were so inclined.
So I just wanted to give we had only one more film to cover, and that was Tea. And it's about a festival in Miami, actually, where people concoct costumes to honor their dead. And I thought it was really visually appealing. I think it was a little bit too long, but again, I think this whole series of shorts that were selected here really have something to offer. And I tell people to seek it out through the Magic Lantern streaming service.
That's right. So we were talking about the Sundance Film Festival Shorts Tour 2020, which, as Mary Pat just said, is streaming through the Magic Lantern Theater. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Spokane Public Radio's first fun drive was taken down in 1980 when Mount St. Helens blew. Fast forward 35 years to 2015, and our first fun drive from our historic fire station number 3 was blown down by a giant windstorm. SPR operated by bouncing the signal off of the old building, where we had enough power from a gas generator to power one light bulb and one radio station for a few days. Through natural disasters, wars, civil emergencies, recessions, civil unrest, and now a pandemic, Spokane Public Radio has been here to help our audience make sense of it all. On air and online, our service is here for you because of you sustaining or becoming a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for helping provide a great public radio service.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mayor Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Sundance Film Festival Shorts Tour 2020, which is streaming through the Magic Lantern Theater. Let's now move to the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. By now, we all know how problematic the internet can be. Along with all the wondrous features that make life more easy than ever, from using Google to discover everything you need to know about some subject, to using Twitter to share your opinion on that subject to the world at large, the minds behind the invention have one singular intention. They want to discover who each of us is, what our desires are, and all in an effort to sell us something. Maybe a product or a service, but in the process, they have created something that, sometimes subtly, sometimes all too obviously, has the intent of shaping the way we think and even feel. The effect is dangerous, say many of those whom filmmaker Jeff Orlovsky interviews in his documentary. And while you can argue that some of what Orlovsky gives us, such as the story of the fictional family that plays out between all of the talking head commentaries, doesn't work, it's difficult to fault his conclusions.
And Dan, you mentioned that all of us know these things, but as a practical matter, I'm not sure, as we were talking about before we went on the air, that everyone knows the extent to which this data mining and algorithms are used in order to follow us, track us, and spy on us. And maybe there's a generational divide here, because Nathan can weigh in, and I can also speak to the fact that in my criminal procedure class, we discuss reasonable expectations of privacy as a sort of touchstone issue. And I have asked my classes over the years about what their reasonable expectation of privacy is in all of their activities. And I could say some people said, frankly, they had no expectation of privacy in anything that we were doing. And so I think there has been a shift. The thing that was curious, I guess fascinating in some ways to me, was the whole psychological aspect of this. But similar things were happening with the IBM computers way back in the 1960s, where they had, you know, psychologists involved, maybe not, certainly not as sophisticated as now, in order to try to figure out what users want, need, and so forth, and how they might be able to upsell people and boost opportunities. But I'm going to give a shout out about one thing that really bothered me about this film. And that was the fact that they got really good access to all these people who had been high level designers and
ethicists
and people who had been, you know, in the corporate structure at all of the big tech companies after the fact. So we got no sense that any of these people during the time that they were making bank at these tech companies were pushing back about anything that was happening or whatever. So now they're starting to feel remorseful from their, you know, yachts off the coast of Southern California and so forth. And that bothered me because I think that if you're involved in an enterprise and you realize something's going off the rails or you have ethical concerns about what's happening, I think it would be good maybe if you got more involved in the conversation. And we do have a few examples of people who said while interviewed for The Social Dilemma that they had, you know, spoken up and so forth. But yeah, that was a little bit sleazoid to me, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to defend any of the millionaires interviewed herein, although it does seem like, you know, some of them were definitely there in the early days when it did genuinely seem like they were going to change the world for the better. And, you know, the bigger the thing got, the more complex the infrastructure got. Of course, eventually capitalism wins. And I mean, I think when you're talking about The Social Dilemma, that is kind of the big boogeyman in the room is capitalism, is that eventually these things will be monetized. And it's not just that your information is being sold to other corporations, it's that those corporations are basically trying to change your behavior. That is sort of what this movie is arguing. And I think it does that pretty compellingly. I mean, I don't really think there was any information in this that I didn't know already. If I didn't use it for work so much, I probably would have gotten rid of social media a while ago just because it does seem so, you know, kind of ethically questionable anymore. I think the thing that struck me the most in these interviews was that here you have some of these people that helped design and engineer these social media platforms telling us they don't let their own children use those platforms that they created and helped put together so long ago. I mean, I think that speaks volumes unto itself. But I do think you alluded to, Dan, the dramatic scenes that are in this movie, because this isn't just talking heads and bar graphs. There is a whole scripted narrative going on in between these talking heads that I think nearly torpedoes this movie because they are so bad. I mean, it's like bad Lifetime movie sequences. There's a scene where a little girl literally takes a hammer to, well, subtlety, I suppose, that had me laughing out loud, even though I was supposed to, you know, be shocked by it. And then you also have these scenes with the actor, Vincent Kartheiser, who's basically playing the personification of social media algorithms. And I sort of understand what they were doing with this to kind of illustrate how these things have seeped into our lives. But I don't know, it's like either make a bad made-for-TV drama about social media or make a documentary. I don't think it works. I mean, obviously we've seen recreations, we've seen dramatic scenes in documentaries, but this was, I mean, it's really bad. Every time they cut to that stupid family, I was like, I wanted to fast forward through it.
We have had the opportunity to talk about this docudrama phenomenon, and we could probably point to some examples of the of where it's been done better. I mean,
I think in this very program, let's go back to the short, The Deepest Hole, you know, the one by Matt McCormick. I mean, that's a combination of a very imaginative way of doing a documentary and throwing in some narrative feedback.
Yeah, it's like a mixed media piece, kind of.
Yeah, I think the problem is in this one and some of the other ones that we've seen, there are these two stories happening simultaneously, but the cuts between them, you know, are sort of puzzling. And as you said, the narrative aspect of this is just not well done. It's not well acted. It's not well presented and so forth.
It's just mind-numbingly pedestrian. It just takes the most cliche aspects of how all this affects families and throws it up on the screen and tries to convince us, ooh, this is something new.
And then I was wondering, was that purposeful in some way? Because as you're saying, it was so bad, you almost wonder, well, was this being used for a particular purpose? And I decided in the end that that was not true.
No.
So should this have been a short film? Should this have been, something different? I mean, we're always trying to redirect when, Nathan, you're the only one who's actually directed some films. But here, Nathan, you're saying this isn't really new content, at least for your generation. And now we're criticizing the sort of drama part of it. So should this have been a 15-minute public service announcement?
Well, I mean, I think if you do look at The Social Dilemma as a kind of PSA, and maybe those dramatic scenes would work for, say, a younger audience who might check out. And now I'm going to defend the thing that I criticized, but so maybe I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth here. But I think that, you know, if you showed this to the teenagers who are being impacted by social media, as we're told in this film, in terms of, you know, rates of suicide and self-harm because of online bullying, they might check out as soon as, you know, an infographic goes up on the screen. But when they see sort of this playlet about the dangers of posting on social media or getting sucked into Facebook, where it just consumes your day, maybe it would serve its purpose that way. So possibly that's what they were thinking.
But it could have been done so much better. What was the animated movie about the various parts of the brain?
Inside Out,
exactly. I mean, there's a part of this whole narrative that mirrors Inside Out. You have the three parts of the algorithms who are trying, you know, it's just...
Yes, you're right. You're right, Dan. This Netflix documentary isn't as good as one of the best Pixar films. You got me there.
Yeah, there's that.
Well, but I still think ultimately that there is good messaging here. And along with everything that's good about the film, there's just some stuff, bad stuff. So you can fast forward through that stuff and get to the meat of the matter.
I don't think they're going to be putting that quote on the poster. If you fast forward through some stuff, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, we were just talking about the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinman, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the Sundance Film Festival Shorts Tour 2020, which is streaming through the Magic Lantern Theater. Take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you too, our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from the author Neil Gaiman. Google can bring you back 100,000 answers. A librarian can bring you back the right one. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.